Jeff Stelling is on the phone. Hi, Jeff. How are you today?
Hi, Steve. Glad to be here.
Well, good. I'm glad you could make it. I know you got a lot going on today, and we're going to chat for a while. And we were talking offline. I was talking offline with Jeff, off the air with Jeff, about my recollection of the Stelling banjo. It goes back to a little album called Banjo Sandwich, Alan Monday. And I heard that album, and it blew my mind. I've talked to Alan about this. He was on the show a month or so ago. And I kept looking for the credits, and I said, what the heck is a Stelling banjo? And then, of course, that was back in, like, what, 75, 74? And
75.
75. And that was, what, the second one or the third one? I forget.
Well, he had banjo number 12.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
The banjo I made, it was a staghorn, and that was the first recording anybody made with a Stelling banjo.
Well, I'll tell you what, you picked a good one to kick it off with, because that to me is still, you know, there are these recordings out there that you never forget, Jeff. And of course, every banjo player, and I'm a very pedestrian banjo player. I say that very proudly. But everyone who wants to play a banjo, you got Foggy Mountain Banjo. You probably got a couple other albums out there, but I think Banjo Sandwich set the course for the 70s and beyond that, as far as if you're a banjo player and you want to hear a great sound and hear a great banjo, Alan Monday's Banjo Sandwich is just a phenomenal album.
That was a fantastic album, and it really helped the Stelling banjo sound. I mean, people remember the sound of that banjo, and the way they recorded it was fantastic. So I'm really indebted to Alan for having done that. And he's stuck with me all these years, recording virtually every album he's ever made with one of my banjos.
It's one of those weird things, Jeff. It's almost like if folks out there, they're probably familiar. I played Remember Me in the first half hour from that album, my favorite tunes that he put on that album. If you're familiar with Alan's style and the notes that he chooses, it's a melodic style, but there's a pretty kind of a lilt or bounce to it. And there's something about Alan's style with that Stelling sound. It's almost like they were made to go together. In my mind, maybe it's because I first heard them both at this. I heard Alan before that, but on that album, it was just, this is a perfect marriage of sound and style.
Well, I agree with that.
I didn't expect you to disagree. But Alan's one of my favorite players and just one of the nicest guys I ever met. But boy, the Stelling banjo, he talked a little bit about, he's known you for so long, and this was a banjo. He actually said it worked for him because it was the first banjo that he had that was like all of one make, instead of having, you know, different pieces put together of different Gibsons and whatnot. He was thrilled to get a banjo that was sort of, you know, a one-piece thing, and he loved the sound of it. But I want you to talk a little bit about how you got the concept. What's different about the Stelling banjos back then, and then we'll kind of bring it up to date a little bit, if you don't mind.
Well, I met Alan in Nashville, I think it was around 1968, and he was playing a Gibson, I think it was originally a ball bearing model, and he had just auditioned for Jimmy Martin and got the job playing with him during the Fan Fest there in Nashville, and I worked on his banjo, trying to make it sound better, his Gibson. And I guess I did make it sound a little bit better, but he and I became very good friends. And I was in the Navy, going to Vanderbilt, not really in business yet. But that's where I got my start. And I bought a bunch of banjo parts to make my first copy of the Gibson, actually. I bought parts from George Gruen, mostly, well, they're all Gibson parts. And I made my own rim at a hobby shop at a nearby Air Force base. This is closed. But that's how I got my start. And Alan and I were constantly in touch with each other, and I'd always go down to the Dusty Road Tavern and play music. I played bass, and I was a struggling banjo player, but Alan Monday was one of my heroes, and I also liked Bill like the band he was playing in, and all the musicians.
The bass player that Alan was with?
Well, I liked Jimmy Martin.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Mixing up the banjo players.
Yeah, okay, I'm sorry.
That played with Jimmy Martin. Bill Emerson was one of them.
Yeah, sure.
So anyway, I was really a fan of Jimmy Martin's banjo players and his music. I got to play with a lot of them down at the Dusty Road Tavern, and Alan was there quite often. So we got to see each other quite a bit. 68, 69, 70. And then I went off 1971 to serve my time in the Navy. And that's why I was at Vanderbilt in the first place, was to get my commission, and then they sent me off to San Diego. And ironically, Alan ended up in North Hollywood, California. So we were together again, to paraphrase an album that he and Sam Bush,
yeah, sure.
Yeah. And it's funny that I met Sam Bush through Alan Bundy. I met a lot of people through Alan. So anyway, where were we going? I forgot the question.
Well, we were talking about Alan Bundy and the fact that he wound up really making the first album with one of your banjos, and you were kind of leading up as to how that happened.
Well, yeah, I had a banjo made when I was in California. The ninth banjo I made for a friend of mine in San Diego, and it was a Golden Cross, the first Golden Cross I ever made. And I brought it up to North Hollywood, to Alan's place. I said, here, this is a banjo that I made for a friend of mine, and I want you to play it. Let me know how you like it. So he played it, and he liked it quite a bit. And I said, well, if I made you another one that sounded like this, would you play it? He said, yeah, if it sounds like this, I'll play it. And he did. I made a staghorn, which was the second staghorn I ever made. And he played that for quite a few years. It was banjo number 12. And subsequently, he ended up with quite a few other ones. So anyway, he made Banjo Sandwich with that album. I mean, with that banjo. And I think he recorded a few other albums with that one before he got another banjo.
Without Jeff, if I can ask you, without all of the details of the concepts and the ideas you brought to building a banjo, but what is it that you did different? Obviously, you had an idea, and you weren't just slapping together pieces that other Gibsons had, the pieces of other Gibson banjos. You did something different because the Stelling banjo has a very unique sound.
Well, the main thing was the fit of the tone ring, rim, and flange on the Gibson, which I was very familiar with, because I had torn apart a few of them. I noticed that the tone ring was a slip fit over the outside edge of the rim, and any shrinkage of the rim would actually make the tone ring slop around and not really fit tightly. And it's basically the same thing with the flange. The rim was made out of wood, tone ring and flange were made out of metal, and wood would shrink with the lack of humidity or the wood drying out. And I just noticed that if you could get a better fit, like a wedge fit, which is the same fit that they use in the propellers on aircraft engines, they have a cone bearing that allows the propeller hub to fit over the prop shaft, with a cone bearing in between, allowing the propeller hub to fit perfectly concentrically on that prop shaft with absolutely no clearance, because the cone bearing is at an angle, and so is the inside of the hub of the propeller. So it has to fit perfectly, and then at the end, the prop shaft has a little lip on it where it the propeller, the nut that holds the whole thing on there is kind of like looking at a tension hoop on a banjo, pulling all this stuff toward the rim and in a perfectly concentric shape and, perfectly matched to the rim so there could possibly not be any deformity in the shape of the rim or the tone ring that would cause a lack of fit. Anyway, that's what I learned in the Navy and applied it to the banjo, and it worked out quite well.
Worked out very well. I had no idea that the genesis for your thoughts on redoing the inside of the guts of the Stelling banjo came from your experience in the Navy. That I'm absolutely floored that you could take that engineering concept and apply it to a better sounding banjo or a different sounding banjo.
Well, I was a banjo player, and I was an aircraft mechanic, and when I saw the way things fit between the propeller and the prop shaft, I immediately saw a banjo.
Really?
And from there, it just went into a patent and starting a business.
That must have been kind of a bold step. I mean, I can't imagine that you go into building banjos where you have, Gibson being the banjo builder, and here you're going to start a business with a new idea. That must have been a little intimidating.
Oh, it was kind of daunting, but I knew I had something better than what Gibson had, and I flew back and forth between Washington, D.C. and San Diego to visit a patent attorney 3 times before I got my patent. And the last time I went, I took a Gibson banjo that I owned and one of my recently made banjos, and I said, look, I'm going to play these banjos for you, and I hope you can hear the difference between my banjo and the Gibson. So I played my banjos on the second floor of the patent office in 1974. Well, I think it was probably late 74, because I got that idea around October or November of 74. And I flew to Washington and played my banjos for this guy, and the third time we had talked. And everybody on the second floor of the patent office came out there to hear me play the banjo.
I bet you that's a day they remember forever. The day the banjos came to the patent office in Washington.
Yeah. And in about a year after I applied for the patent, I got it.
You think they gave you the patent just so you wouldn't bring a banjo back to Washington, D.C. in their building again? He's been here 2 or 3 times, folks. If we don't do this, he's just going to keep bringing him back and playing.
Well, the third time was a charm.
Great. That's incredible. I had no idea. That's a great story. That's a great story. When was it? So that was the mid-70s? Was the patent obtained before, as a benchmark, before the Banjo Sandwich album came out?
The Banjo Sandwich?
Yeah.
I can't remember exactly when that album came out.
I think it was 75, Jeff.
Because Alan didn't get that banjo until March of 75.
Okay.
So he probably recorded that slightly before I got the patent.
Okay.
I mean, the patent was pending for a while, but they both happened the same year.
Well, one of your first, you were talking about Bill Emerson, who's been on this show and is, again, a fun, great, great banjo player from those old Jimmy Martin days and still today and all the stuff he's done with the other bands he's been in. But you had a Bill Emerson model. You had an Alan Mundy model early on.
Yeah, I did. I had the Alan Mundy Staghorn and the Bill Emerson Red Fox.
Yep.
And I'm still making the Bill Emerson Red Fox. And it's also known as the Red Fox Deluxe. The Alan Mundy Staghorn is pretty much a discontinued model. And the reason both of these models were discontinued for a while because customers tend to not like somebody else's name on their banjo.
Really?
Even though Earl Scruggs has his name on the Gibson Earl Scruggs model, people are just very reticent to have somebody else's name on their banjo. They'd rather just have a model name, I think.
Really? So I'd have taken, if I could have afforded one back in those days, I'd have bought either one of them, both of them.
I'd have been happy to have Bill's name or Alan's name on a banjo I was playing back in the 70s.
Well, if you owned one of these models, the original Alan Munger Staghorn or the Bill Emerson Red Fox, and there was a Bill Emerson Virginian also.
Okay.
Where they actually had the signature inlaid into the fingerboard. They're very rare banjos because we didn't make any more than 15 of each of them.
Oh.
So, you know, time will tell. Those things will probably bring their money above and beyond what the other models without their name would be.
Well, you've put Stelling banjos in a lot of hands of a lot of great players over the years and still are doing so.
Yeah. And I'm proud to say that Ralph Stanley and Sonny Osborne and Little Roy Lewis all played my banjo for years. And many banjo players played with Jimmy Martin that played my banjo, including James Bailey. No, he was with the Country Gentlemen. But Alan Mundy, Tom Adams, and Bill Emerson all played with Jimmy Martin.
Yes. Well, and Sonny Osborne did way back.
Yeah, well, Sonny Osborne played, the Osborne brothers played with Jimmy Martin on a couple of albums.
Right.
And Sonny Osborne recorded with one of my banjos in his album, and he recorded in Japan, Live in Japan, I think his name was.
Yeah. Well, that's not a bad list that you've just rattled off, and I know there's other people that play them, and you're just kind of going by memory of those celebrated names, but boy, Stelling banjos are still everywhere and coveted, and still have, there's something about that sound that you can recognize it in almost anybody's hands that it's a Stelling banjo. I'm too general in saying it's a brighter sound. And I don't know what it is I'm really hearing, you know, in my ears, but I recognize that tone. It's a gorgeous sound.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
I say it's an absolutely gorgeous sound. I sometimes think in terms of it being brighter, but I think that's too simplistic, maybe.
You know, I want to mention something that just recently happened. A girl from West Virginia sent me an email. She was 15 years old, and she and her brother, her name is Martika, and her brother is William. Martika and William Lake. And they play just like Flattened Scruggs.
Huh.
They just decided that they were going to use all the material that Flattened Scruggs did, and that was all they were going to play. And she said she was interested in getting a Stelling banjo. And I said, well, let me hear, you know, send me a CD or something. So she sent me a CD that her mother had recorded in their living room. And I was blown away. She sounded so just like Earl Scruggs, and her brother sounded just like Lester Flatt.
Oh.
And she was only 15 at the time, and he was 12. And I thought, my goodness, bluegrass has got a great future if we have kids like this coming up and learning how to play and sound just like the traditional masters that form bluegrass the way we earlier on, you know, the original traditional bluegrass that we learned to love so much.
Sure. Oh, it's still good. That brings us kind of full circle to talking about Gray Fox when we were right before we went on the air, and your participation in what has become the Gray Fox Festival and your donation and your contributions toward scholarship funds. You want to talk about that for a minute? And I know you're busy. I'll let you get out of here. Go ahead.
So what would you like to talk about?
Well, your involvement with the Gray Fox Festival, the fact that, you know, I already mentioned that Stelling is a sponsor of the High Meadow stage, and you talked about the fact that you have banjos that you donate, and it's become a scholarship fund, and that kind of ties into what you're talking about with this young band, that your involvement is still not just to sell banjos, but you're still sort of supporting the sound of bluegrass as we know it.
Well, I have no doubt that these two young kids will eventually be on stage at places like Gray Fox. They've already played at the Wheeling, West Virginia Jamboree in TV shows around their hometown in West Virginia. I'm sure people will see these kids playing in the next 10 years. They're going to be famous. And as far as the scholarship fund, I just take a model that is one of our more popular ones called Red Fox, ironically, I turned that into the Gray Fox model just by changing the inlay of the pigment. And I put the logo of the Gray Fox Festival up there in the pigment.
Oh, okay, cool.
And also engraved that on the tailpiece, and then have Gray Fox engraved on the armrest. And I've been doing that ever since they had the Gray Fox Festival. Before that, I did it for the Winterhawk Festival. And it's a one-of-a-kind, once a year.
Yeah.
And it's valued about $5,000. Normally raffle it off on a Saturday night. It should be tonight. A week from now.
A week from tonight, yeah, I'll be there.
And I was lucky enough to be there many years while we raffled it off, and I got to go up on stage while they pulled the ticket out and read off the name of the winner. I'd play the banjo and announce the winner, and the winner, if they were there, they'd come up on stage, and it was just really an awesome experience.
That's a great thing that you're still contributing to and keeping bluegrass going, and the money from that raffle goes to the scholarship fund you're talking about.
Yeah, and I personally know two of the scholarship winners. Casey Henry is one of them.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And Bill Evans.
Okay.
And both of them were, I met them in Virginia, and Bill Evans now lives out in California.
Right.
Casey lives back in Winchester, where her parents are. She was living in Nashville for a while, but I can see that scholarship fund is really doing a lot of good stuff.
Oh, yeah. Listen, Bill Evans is a good friend of mine. I know who Casey is, but I've known Bill for many years, and that was an excellent choice.
Yeah, I'm very proud of the fact that I've been part of that.
Yeah.
And Martin Guitar got involved with it after that, after I initiated this thing back in 93, I think. And then some other instrument makers got involved, and now there's a whole lot of instruments being raffled off every year, adding to various funds they have. My banjo is going into the scholarship fund every year, as is Martin, I think.
Now, if somebody goes to Gray Fox, will they be able to see the banjo before it's raffled off?
Yeah, the banjo will be on display, and usually they get some well-known banjo player to play it on stage at least once or twice before the raffle's over.
Okay.
And it's always a nice banjo. I'd love to have one myself.
Don't you know the guy that makes them, though?
Yeah.
He'd probably cut you a deal, don't you think?
Well, you know, if I was eligible, I'd try to buy a ticket and see if I can win it back myself.
All right, Jeff. I know
I'm not allowed to do that.
Oh, well, okay. All right. Technical. You don't want to violate the law. I understand that. Jeff, I know you're really busy, and we planned this to kind of get you in for a half an hour and get you out, and I really appreciate it. Guys, I'm so happy to get to talk to maker of one of the finest banjo players made. Just made a mark on me through Alan Munday and all the players and Bill Emerson. And the Stelling banjos are just phenomenal. And Ned Lubarecki, I kicked off the show today with Ned from that Stelling.
He's one of the best banjo players I know.
Ned absolutely is one of the best players on the planet. And I kicked it off with that tune he put on your Stelling Anthology, Emergency Pull Off. And every time
Emergency
I listen to
Pull-Off.
Yeah.
That's on my album, The Anthology.
Yeah. Everybody's on that thing.
I think it is one of the most, it is not, I think it is the most popular tune on that.
CD. And you know, and I listen to it often, and Ned, I know Ned very well also, but when you listen to it with the headphones, I'm getting ready for the show, and you hear all the little things that he's doing, and I've seen him do it, but Ned, it's just, he took that Stelling and just did it right by you, that's all.
Well, I really appreciate all these great banjo players that played on that CD.
Oh, it's a great Stelling Anthology, it's a wonderful album, everybody on is playing a Stelling.
Well, thanks a lot for letting me, be
on your show. Hey, Jeff, I appreciate it, man. This has been great. I've enjoyed, and of course there's a Stelling website if people want to keep up with what's going on in the world of Stelling banjos. That's easy enough to find. Just look for Stelling banjos, right?
Yep, stellingbanjo.com.
Okay. All right, Jeff, appreciate your time on a Saturday afternoon, and I'll talk to you down the road somewhere, and I'll get a chance to look at that special Gray Fox Stelling when I get up to New York.
All right.
Hey, and thanks.
Say hi to all my friends up there. Oh, like Lisa and Mary and Rousey and Janet. And Steve Haverick, the down-home guitar. He's taking my place.
Okay, I'll talk to Steve. All right, I'll catch up with him. Okay.
All right, thanks a lot,
Hey,
Steve.
Thanks, Jeff. Take care, man. That was Jeff Stelling. That was fun. I had no idea. And maybe I knew that before about the propeller, but when you talk to someone like Jeff Stelling, and if you've ever heard the banjos and seen one and played them, and you have a concept of what a banjo is going to sound like, then you realize that he got the idea from his military service and then took it over, and applied it to the making of a banjo. Now, Hal Mines, there has to be a genius touch involved in that. Take that concept and then make it work, especially to the level that Stelling banjos are appreciated. And I say all the time, the Banjo Sandwich album was the first time I heard a Stelling. Turns out that was the first album that was recorded with a Stelling. But you want to hear the best sound of a Stelling in the hands of a master, Alan Mundy. Banjo Sandwich just kills. That put the Stelling banjo on the market forever and ever, a very distinctive sound with one of the best players ever. And then, like as Jeff was saying, you know, the Stelling Anthology CD, which when we started out, was Ned Lubrecki playing Emergency Pull-Off, which is a tune that Ned wrote. And fantastic playing. And a fantastic album with all those great Stelling players. I'm thrilled to death, folks, to get to finally talk to Jeff Stelling. I've seen him at different things. I've seen him at IBMA. I've probably said howdy before, but to get to talk to Jeff, and it was so nice of him to take time today to be available. And this is fun. This is fun.